So good afternoon, everybody. I want to start this out by introducing my co-authors a little bit. I met John, I think, the first time at a soil quality workshop in Ames, Iowa. I'm not sure the exact year, Doug, if you remember when. I think it was probably this, well, early 90s, mid-90s, somewhere in there. I met John at a workshop and was introduced to a little bit of his passion for soils, and as I listened to him make his presentations and things there. When I met him, I was a soil scientist up at Mandan, North Dakota, and a few years later an opportunity came up to move to Lincoln, and I was really excited with the opportunity to get down there and work with John. Ray Driver is a soil microbiologist. She teaches the soil microbiology classes in Lincoln at UNL. Prior to Ray being hired for a few years, John Duran taught the soil microbiology class. So when Ray showed up in Lincoln, John was happy to have somebody else to teach that class. But Ray came from Canada, so when she got to Lincoln, she really didn't have a lot of contacts in the soil science community in the U.S., and John kind of took her under his wing, like he is known to do, and introduced her to a lot of the people across the country working in that area. And then the third one, Gary Varvel, had the pleasure of both having John as a teacher for soil microbiology, and then after graduating, he went up to Minnesota for a few years to work, and then eventually came back to Lincoln and worked with John for, a few years. So when we were asked to give this talk, the first thing I did was ask Ray and Gary to join me to make the presentation. And first thing we decided was that we didn't want to make this a roast. Okay, we wanted to be nice to John. But we've got a lot of years of interaction with John, and so I hope you can appreciate we've got some fodder there that we could share. But we are going to try and be nice and keep this from being a roast. So when we kind of decided on that, then I looked at the schedule and I saw that I was the last one. And it was like, what's going to be left? So this has probably been one of the hardest talks I have ever had to try to prepare. As I was working on it and trying to come up with ideas, I was remembered a seminar that Drew Lyon gave a few years ago. And what he was doing, he's out in Sydney, Nebraska, which is on the other side of the state, and he had come back to Lincoln to give a seminar on the long-term tillage plots out there. And during his seminar, he had a short video that he had made in 1994, I believe. And in that video, he interviewed Gary and Charlie Fenster, and Gary Peterson and Charlie Fenster, who were the ones that had kind of started those plots. And I thought there were parts of that video that I thought would make kind of a nice introduction to our talk. So what I've got here, Drew was gracious enough to share that with me. And hopefully you'll be able to hear it, and hopefully the quality hasn't deteriorated too much from a couple of translations to get it so it would work in PowerPoint. Come on. Please work. Okay.
Okay, we brought a couple of USDARS scientists from Lincoln out here to talk a little bit about their involvement in these plots here. They've been very active members and team players in the studies that have gone on here at the long-term tillage plots. I'm just going to hand the mic over to Jim Power, who's kind of headed the group there in Lincoln, and let him give a little history of USDARS involvement in this site.
Okay, thanks, Drew. I think it's mentioned earlier, way back in the 1930s, the USDA group on campus at Lincoln was active in tillage research, and with the work of Dooley and Russell and the fellows in those days, and initiated some of the first research on no-till or reduced tillage methods, particularly the stubble mulch methods. Over the years, this group has, of course, been change of personnel, but they have continued this type of research out of Lincoln, and in the late 1970s, we initiated some of the activity here out at Sydney on these tillage plots, and looking at the effects of tillage practices, particularly summer fallow practices, on the changes in soil property and how these might affect the biology of the soil and ultimately the nutrient conservation, nutrient transformations, and ultimately grain yields. So starting about 1978, Dr. John Duran and Dr. Lloyd Mielke began some initial studies here on soil microbiology and soil physical properties, and particularly in the early 80s, we were very deeply involved, probably six or seven or eight scientists in some years involved in these projects and did some rather intensive studies. And I think I'll turn the mic over to John and let him give you some of the specifics of some of the projects that he's been involved with.
Well, I'd like to say that these plots out here actually provided a real unique opportunity for soil scientists, ecologists, to work in a kind of an in-field laboratory to look at some of the ecological principles and the effects of management on nutrient cycling, effects on the soil physical environment, and how all that interrelates with sustainable ag management practices. And as a new PhD scientist coming to Nebraska in 1975, I found it pretty refreshing to be able to stop by here in Sydney, Nebraska, and work with a fellow like Charlie Fenster. He's been a real innovator and a real encouragement to me, I know. So I had some real early on initial hands-on experience on looking at different tillage management practices. And I appreciate that, Charlie. I should say a lot of the work that we conducted out here on these tillage management plots was mainly looking at the effects of tillage management on the soil physical environment and how that influences biological processes that are important in regulating the availability of nutrients, microbial processes in the soil. And for many years, we went through some rather intensive characterizations of these soils under these given management techniques to see how they affected these basic processes. And these plots have really been kind of a gold mine because Gary Peterson and Charlie Fenster both had the foresight to include into these replicated comparisons a native grass comparison, a native sod situation, which enabled us to look at how the ecology of the soil was changed, the physical environment for those biological processes to occur was changed. And we discovered early on, as several graduate students working out here, that the ecological environments under these different tillage management practices vary considerably. The soil temperature, the density of the soil, the water content, all is influenced by the tillage and residue management practices were very unique. The Kemp fallow system turned out to be more similar to the native sod situation with respect to conservation of soil moisture, the density of the soil, the organic matter levels and contents near the surface soil. So we found out early on that the environments in these soils were quite different and had a rather dramatic influence on aerobic and anaerobic microbial processes that occur in the soil. And many of these processes are important in controlling and regulating nitrogen availability, among other things. So we had a very good opportunity to study in a realistic setting, not just in the laboratory, a lot of these ecological principles. And we found that the potential for denitrification in the Kemp fallow management system as compared with the black fallow or compared with the subfill management was much greater. And that had significant impacts or influence on nitrogen cycling.
All right. There. So there are a couple of neat things that I about that video. Cindy, I think you did some work for your PhD work there. The first paper that Ray Driver wrote when she got to Nebraska was based on work there. And then I'll get back to Jim Power here in just a minute. But folks, there's a heck of a lot of soil between Lincoln and Sydney. And so when they started, that was 55 mile an hour speed limits. That's a long way to go. So when he said there's something special there, there must have been something real special there to want to slog through that. The video that Drew sent has got 12 files, and they're each about 5 minutes long, but we'll hold it to just that one. So, Drew, thank you very much for sharing that. Getting back to Jim Power, another one of the special things about that clip was shortly after I got to Lincoln, John got an invitation from Soil Science to write a review paper for the Millennium issue of that journal. And he came into my office and he said, you know, I really don't have time unless I can get a couple of co-authors. And he said, I think we can probably call Jim and have him come in and help us do a little brainstorming on this. And what we've got there, I work for the government, so I can't ask anybody their age, but I think we've got three generations of soil scientists roughly there. And what it kind of translated to was I wrote the paper and then they kind of told me what to write. It was a very enjoyable, rewarding experience to work with the two of them on that. To sit down and listen to them talk about the people that they had worked with over the years, the concepts that they thought were important in their work, how our discipline had evolved over the years, and me as the relative, well, I was the newcomer of the group by a long shot, and trying to get that and synthesize all their comments and get it into a paper. And it was it was a lot of hard work, but it was a very enjoyable project, and it was a classic example of John willing to take anybody and drag them into the fray and get them involved. But another satisfying, I guess, aspect of it, this paper was, I'm pretty sure, the last professional thing that Jim worked on. He passed away before it came out in print, so it was rather enjoyable to work with him on that and get his perspective on things. In the video, John alluded to doing or some rather intensive studies, and I think you've gotten some appreciation from some of the earlier speakers about John's intensity when he did something. Mark had this graph up on there earlier, and I don't know how many data points there are actually on that, but I found the evidence for the work that went behind creating this relationship. It's another example of the way John was able to take or find a way to unify a whole bunch of different processes in one relationship. He's got water-filled pore space is what you're measuring there, but it ties together so many aspects of microbial activity in the soil, so many different processes. But to develop that curve, when I got to Lincoln, we went out to the farm one day, and there was like, 55-gallon drums of soil from all over the United States that went into the lab and studies and the greenhouse studies that he to develop this work. And the data set that was generated from that was actually what we used to develop the scoring curve for the soil management assessment framework for water-filled pore space. But, John, am I right that the actual data for that, probably it hasn't been published in a peer-reviewed journal, has it? It wasn't it just a proceedings paper that? So it's kind of, anyhow. Yes. And then we've heard of several stories of the soil quality test kit, and to me the real value of this is it gets people out and working with soil and getting them to think about the processes that are going on and really thinking about how what they're doing to the land affects other things, how it does the other functions that it's doing. There are components there. They can take the measurements. They can use our assessment, the assessment framework that several of us have been working on. But I think the educational aspects of it, of getting people to just appreciate what soil does and what our treatment of it does to how well it can do that, is probably the most important part. again, the intensive interactions with the various committees and developing the books, you're seeing some reoccurring themes. We've all got the same pictures of the same books and the same test kits. And then one of the later things that John worked on in the lab was another one of his, I mean, it was an attempt to take a relatively simple measurement and give it to the farmers or the landowners, and it was something that they could go out, measure themselves, and get meaningful information about how their management practices were affecting the land. In the lower right is the commercially available handheld electroconductivity meter. I think when it became commercially available, the unit bought one for each of the scientists, and we use them routinely now for out in the field. They measure both EC and temperature. But that before that became commercially available, there were a number of iterations of the meter, and the one on the left is probably, 3.5 feet tall? You can see up at the very top is the little blue meter part. But it was an attempt to get a meter that, like I said, the farmers could use and get meaningful measurements on their own. And John worked with a number of farmer groups, and he found that just that simple measure in our non-saline soils of the Corn Belt, you could get a really nice relationship between soil nitrate and EC, and they could use that as a nutrient management tool. No soil testing involved, a relatively straightforward measurement, just had to kind of get some equilibrium in terms of soil moisture, and it worked very, very well. So I think I've still got a little bit of time, and what I'd like to do, I guess, is just open it up and let Ray and Gary offer any comments that they might want to share. I'm hitting them cold with this. I really didn't tell them I was going to do this, but yeah.
I can share a couple, but they're probably going to have to come more from Pam Bushman, who was the ARS secretary.
So am I? We're taking
the front, Ray.
Oh, you want me to come up?
Yeah, come on.
It's
good for your circulation.
Okay. I'll sort of step back a bit. Brian mentioned that when I did come to Lincoln in 94, I really didn't know any sort. Well, I knew very few people in Lincoln, and I knew very few U.S. scientists because I did all my graduate work in Canada. And John was actually the only person I knew when I came to Lincoln, Nebraska, because he had come up to Edmonton, Alberta when I was doing my graduate work and was on a PhD committee. So that's where I met John, and when I saw the position being advertised for Lincoln, I thought, oh, I know John. I know someone there, so I'll apply. So that's what I did. But stepping back, when I came to Lincoln, what was really fun is that I was kind of adopted into the ARS community there. And my office was actually down with all the ARS scientists, so I got to know everyone very well. And Pam Bushman was the secretary at the time. And Pam had some very fun stories about John. And one in particular that I'll always remember was how John would like to make tables for publications. And Pam would be working on some of those things with him to get them in final format. Well, what John liked to do was use either spacers or tabs. He would never use the table function. And then I would come in on a Saturday, and Pam would be in there, and she'd be pulling her hair out because John had decided to do everything in tabs. So that was one of the really cute stories. The other one is probably a little more personal, but it was more to do with clothing. And John had a very set wardrobe. They were kind of like the classic navy blue, they were polyester, I guess, pants, and a short sleeve shirt. And it would be relatively similar every single day. So Pam and I would always kind of chit-chat and say, wonder if we should get John some different clothing. And she'd say, he'd never wear it. But he has graduated into newer clothing in the last few years. So we're very impressed with that. So those are my two little tidbits.
Thank you, Ray.
Gary, do you want to share anything?
Well, it could turn into a roast.
Yeah, well, that's okay. Yeah.
All right, we're close to the break time.
Yeah, okay. Well, a couple of things. I had a real natural tie, like Brian said. John Duran started teaching soil micro at the end of my graduate career. In fact, my last semester in class, and my advisor, Dr. Gary Peterson, had strongly suggested that I avoid taking the previous person's soil microbiology class. So he said, wait it out. He said, maybe somebody else will teach it. And my last semester at Lincoln, John jumped up and took the class. Well, I had knew John. I was a graduate student kind of down in the USDA area, but I was working with Gary and everything else, so I knew that John was pretty intense, but I didn't know how intense he was until I got in his class. And it wasn't that he was intense with the students, but he was intense in what he was trying to teach and trying to get across to you. And he had such a passion, as you all have enumerated several times, and he was trying to get everybody in the class to develop that passion. Well, we got part of it, but we didn't necessarily get all of his. Well, it was interesting. So then I left and went to Minnesota for several years. I came back six years later, joined the research unit, and ironically, John was leaving on a sabbatic for Australia. So I ended up in his office for about 4 or 5 months before they came up with an office for me. And as John will attest, he says he is now pretty well deaf in his left ear. There's a blower outside his office that he sat there, and it had this dull whine to it, and he'd sat there for 25 years listening to that dull whine, and I could attest to the fact why he is deaf in his left ear, because it definitely had a whine to it. But the table thing, I'll just mention one other thing. When Ray mentioned table, this is in a different context. When John retired, right before John retired, most of you never saw his office, but it was stacked to the ceiling with references and everything else. So in Keim Hall, where we were located and everything else, it was shortly going to be remodeled. And so Janet had told him that you can't bring all this stuff home. You absolutely cannot bring this stuff home. So John decided he wanted to impart all the wisdom and materials that he could to anybody in the building that would happen to take them. So we had down around our hallway and everything else, and this was during the school year, and of course there's a lot of students going by and everything else. So John set up a couple tables along the wall there and everything else and started laying out materials on those tables and saying, and he put up this big sign, free to a good home. So this was all going along fine and dandy and everything else, and then we come back in one morning and the materials are gone, but so are the tables. Anyway, John eventually found the tables, and some other graduate students come down there and found everything was gone. They saw the sign that said, free to a good home. So John modified the sign, free to a good home, except for the tables. And there are, I guess, one other one, too. And if you ever traveled with John, which Janet has several times, and you drive for him, the first couple times and everything else, when it got dark, I told John, you have to shut your flashlight off. You're sitting in the front seat. You cannot have the flashlight on while I'm driving because it annoys me. You're sitting there reading your or modifying manuscripts while I'm driving with a flashlight is annoying. If you're going to do that, you got to sit in the back seat. So, like I said, it's more of a roast, but it was a blast to work with you, John.
Thank you, Jerry.
All right, thanks, Gary and Ray. And then I do have one to share as well. I can't help myself here. But our research unit takes a coffee break every morning at 9:30. And it's not unusual for us to have a little snack while we're having our coffee. And John has got a tolerance for ripe bananas like nobody I have ever seen. I mean, the concept of Beyond Banana Bread, I mean, it's more like juice with a brown wrapper. He brought some of the ripest bananas to coffee break than of anybody I've ever seen. So I'll never forget that, John. But one thing I want you to know is we're still working on a lot of the things we talked about in that video. We're looking at the processes. We're continuing on with the work you started, and it's been a pleasure working with you.